GSF 90.1 FM, जो कि बर्नबी, ब्रिटिश कोलंबिया में स्थित है.
Welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints on this week's show. Indigenous youth and young adults explore the world of aviation through an event at the Nanaimo Airport.
And my mom asked me, okay, this is your opportunity. What have you always wanted to do? And I said, fly an airplane. And that just came out of nowhere for me and for her. We both went, what? And I went, yeah, I really want to fly an airplane. I want to be a pilot.
World-renowned Indigenous artist Dempsey Bob opens an art show honoring North Pacific cannery workers.
My dad worked in the cannery, and my mom worked in the cannery. My grandfather, my aunties, my uncles, my sisters, my brothers, I worked there. Uh-huh. You know, so the cannery has been a part of us for over 120 years. I like coming here because it brings me back to my childhood, and it was a great old days, you know. And at that time, our culture was very strong, and we shared and helped everything, and we worked hard. And everybody that worked in the cannery, our people, they said, you know what, it was the best times of their lives, and that's how I feel too.
And Sourceville, Ontario will host this year's Ottawa Carlton plowing match.
Mm-hmm. There's one almost every weekend because each of the counties have their own plowing match. You know, if you're a plower, you can plow pretty well every weekend in August and September. Usually the Wednesday before, if the weather's good, we lay out all the land. They come in and they plow their fields. We have a judge, and judges it. There are quite a variety of people who come.
Welcome to Viewpoints Local News Nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Nice to have you with us again this week. Boris Sassine with you for the next 30 minutes or so. We kick things off in Nanaimo, British Columbia, where Indigenous youth and young adults got a behind-the-scenes look at the wonders and opportunities of careers in aviation and aerospace this week. The Nanaimo Airport YCD hosted the Give Them Wings event last August 13th to introduce them to aviation-related careers. Participants met up with industry professionals, tried out a flight simulator, and learned about aviation's careers and opportunities. Through the eyes and ears of journalist Lauren McKenzie, we'll meet up with Dinah Jamaz, an air traffic controller and director of community engagement and Indigenous partnerships for Elevate Aviation. Also, Stuart Myers, an Indigenous advanced care paramedic, and event participant Benjamin Heald, about his dream of working with planes.
With the world of aviation and aerospace, the Nanaimo Airport YCD hosted an event to highlight the wonders and opportunities in the industry. In cooperation with Indigenous Lift Collective, Alcan Air, Elevate Aviation Learning Center, Gulf Island Seaplanes, and Alley Bird Aero, the Nanaimo Airport hosted the Give Them Wings event to introduce Indigenous youth and young adults to aviation and aerospace-related careers. Keith Garen-Boyce is a chief financial officer and VP of business development for CYD. He says this event came together as Indigenous outreach is very important.
It's important to run an event. There is such a need and a demand for people in the aviation sector. And a big one is there seems to be a lot of people that just don't recognize aviation as being a really good career. And there's a lot of good business type of jobs, but also trades. And right now, it just seems like people aren't pushing trades as much.
He says right now, aircraft maintenance engineers are one of the most in-demand jobs in aviation.
That's the big one. So there was a pilot shortage that seems to be working its way through. But the people that actually maintain the aircrafts, if there's not enough people to maintain the aircrafts, the planes aren't even getting up in the sky, there is no need for the pilots. So aircraft maintenance engineers is a great job, well-paying job. Just there's a big shortage of workers right now, and it's a great career to get into.
Participants of the event got behind-the-scenes look at the airport with tours of the grounds and equipment. They also got to meet with industry professionals, tried their hand at flying a plane with a flight simulator, and learned about aviation careers and opportunities with Give Them Wing partners. Dina Jamez is an air traffic controller and the Director of Community Engagement and Indigenous Partnerships for Elevate Aviation. She says Elevate Aviation is a not-for-profit meant to encourage more women and underrepresented groups to pursue aviation as a career. She says they give a platform for women and underrepresented groups to thrive and succeed through mentorship, bursaries, and skill training. She says the largest barrier for women and underrepresented groups working in aviation is simply the lack of awareness of the opportunities.
And traditionally, careers in aviation were something men would do. And it's just a very specific group of men. So like most of us, we tend to do what we know, like maybe what our dad does or what our mom does, and go into a more typical traditional role. So by bringing out all these women with careers in aviation to talk to other women, makes them aware that these jobs exist and they can do them. And we tell our stories and how we got into them, and makes it more reachable. But the awareness is huge. And then the mentorship following the awareness is also huge. Help them get to where they need to be.
Jamez says that growing up, her dad loved aviation and would take her flying. But it wasn't until she was 26 years old that she became interested in flying.
And I was not happy with my job, with my life. And it was a good point, good time for me to start over. And my mom asked me, okay, this is your opportunity. What have you always wanted to do? I said, fly an airplane. And that just came out of nowhere for me and for her. We both went, what? And I went, yeah, I really want to fly an airplane. I want to be a pilot.
She says it was during her flight training that she learned about air traffic control.
And at the same, so while I was doing my flight training, and this happens to everybody that learns how to fly, you talk to an air traffic controller in the tower and it's very intimidating. It's really scary. So I asked them, may I come up and visit the tower? If I could see their faces, maybe I won't be so scared to talk to them. And so scared of making a mistake, that's what it is. And I went up and looked around and went, what? What is this? How come I didn't know about it? And so I applied to become an air traffic controller and I made it.
She says there's many jobs in aviation, but many people don't know they exist.
And there's so many careers around aviation, if you think about it. Someone's got to design an airplane, build the airplane, paint the airplane, fly the airplane, ensure safety on the airplane, fuel the airplane, park the airplane, build the airport, clean the airport, run the airport, be in the tower. And there's so much. Someone has to do all the data planning for the airlines, for their customers, for their services, for their routing. Nav Canada, there's human resources, there's lawyers, there's airspace planners. There's such a huge variety of jobs in aviation that people just don't know about. And that's our mission, to get that information out there and to help people get in there.
She says 19% of North American air traffic controllers are women. Only 9 to 11% of commercial pilots are female, and less than 3% of air traffic maintenance engineers are women. She says these type of events are important to introduce the next generation who may have never thought about a career in aviation.
Well, I honestly believe even if you did change one person's life and they became someone in aviation, there's now a role model in that community and someone people can look at and say, she's a pilot. She's an aircraft maintenance engineer. And people are like, I didn't even know that existed. Oh, and it's a woman. But just to have that one role model, it's going to snowball.
Stuart Myers is an Indigenous advanced care paramedic with BC Emergency Health Services and works as an advanced care flight paramedic based out in Nanaimo. He does medical transportation across the province. He says at 19 years old, he got into the career because of his passion for helping people.
I got my pilot's license when I started flying when I was 15 years old. I got my pilot's license when I was 16. I started off into going down the pathway of commercial aviation and realized I had more of a passion to go into the emergency medical services. I still have a pilot's license. I'm not current, but I'm fortunate enough now I get to fly. I get the opportunity to fly not only in the fixed wings, but I get opportunities to work with critical care teams and flying the helicopters as well.
He says events like Give Them Wings are important to inspire the next generation of Indigenous youth to work in aviation.
There's so much to do. There's so much to see. The province is beautiful. The lands that we fly over, the places we go, it's really a wonderful profession. I'm blessed and thankful that I have that opportunity.
Benjamin Heald is one of the participants in the event. At 20 years old, Heald already had an interest in aviation. So when he heard of the event, he thought it was right up his alley. He says the day was filled with a lot of learning opportunities, and he got to try his hands at flying over the Comox Valley region in a flight simulator.
And then we just spent some time in a flight simulator, and that was outstanding. I got my hands on the controls for a little bit, right, which is it was really cool. Very touchy controls, but the gentleman who built the simulator was there, and you know he was outstanding. You could tell that he had a genuine passion for it, and he gave us the ins and outs.
Heald says he always thought about joining the military, but also has an interest in physical science. He says the sense of adventure flying with the Air Force has a big appeal on him.
I mean, everyone wants to be a pilot, you know, everyone wants to be Tom Cruise, Top Gun, you know. If I can make it, I'd love to, but if not, I just want to be a part of it, you know.
He says the biggest takeaway from the event is that the world of aviation is vast.
And there's a lot to know, a lot of complexities. It has kind of struck me that all my first step needs to just be getting out there and figuring everything out, like figuring what I want to do out and just meeting people. There's been a lot of great people today who've come to me and told me what they would do in my situation, say, hey, you're young, I would do this, I would do that. There's so many opportunities for you. I'm kind of realizing how many good opportunities there are for me.
For now, Heal says he's looking at ways he can get involved with the aviation scene around Vancouver Island while he looks into education for down the line. Hopefully one day he will fulfill his dreams and finally take flight. This is Lauren McKenzie.
Lauren and her guest kind of gave me the flying bug. A couple of years younger, and who knows, I could have possibly have joined the group.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
The air, water, and earth are all part of Dense Bob's art installation honoring BC's North Pacific cannery workers. Dempsey Bob is a world-renowned indigenous artist. He says he wanted to produce this installation in honor of those who worked there, including many members of his family, over the 120 years that the cannery was in operation. The show is called Salmon Cannery Days. Bob, who was joined by dozens of friends and family on the opening day, hopes the new exhibit will reconnect people's roots to the last of the North Coast canneries, celebrate salmon, and honor the thousands of people on the coast who helped build the cannery and process salmon there for generations. Salmon is the foundation of our culture, Bob says. Salmon is what gave us time and food. In Smithers, British Columbia, here's part of Dan Messick's conversation with Dempsey Bob.
My name is Dempsey Bob. I'm Talton Clinkett from Telegraph Creek, British Columbia, and I'm from the Wolf Clan. That's my crest.
Great, Dempsey. You just opened an exhibition here at the North Pacific Cannery, which I understand has some significance for you and your upbringing. Tell me a little bit about why you wanted to open this exhibition here.
I grew up in the cannery, not here, but in Port Edward, you know, the Nelson Brothers Cannery.
Yeah.
And I wanted to honor the people that were cannery workers and the fishermen. And, you know, like my dad worked in the cannery and my mom worked in the cannery, my grandfather, my aunties, my uncles, my sisters, my brothers, I worked there. Oh, wow. You know, so the cannery has been a part of us for over 120 years. Our people, First Nations, worked in the cannery. How I got the idea was, I remember our people used to get off the train, you know, with their old suitcases and they'd go to work in the cannery. We could go in here and take a look.
Dempsey Bob takes me into the assistant manager's house at the North Pacific Cannery, where one of his installations is being housed.
I'm getting contemporary.
Absolutely.
Contemporary, boy.
Wow. Good to see you. Good to see Margaret and him.
You seen her?
Yeah, we had a cup of tea with her. Yeah.
Okay.
Very nice.
How I got the idea was, the people used to get off the train with their old suitcase. And what I did was, this suitcase is my father-in-law's from the 40s and 50s, you know. And what I did was I kept the old suitcase and I painted a traditional salmon design on it. Because I remember we used to get off the train from Hazelton and Smithers, Prince George, and the Nass, and they get off at the canneries at Sunnyside. They get off here in North Pacific and Cass Yar and Sunnyside and Nelson Brothers in Port Edward. And what I did was, when I was doing this, one of our elders said, she worked in a cannery all her life, and she said, well, you got to include the Japanese and the Chinese people and all the people, that worked in the cannery. I got that Japanese doll from Japan. It was a gift, and the Japanese rice bowl and chopstick was given to me by a friend of mine, Mr. Azumi, and that was from Sunnyside Cannery. And what I did with this wok represents the Chinese people that worked in the cannery, and that's Chinese chopsticks. And I did our traditional, very traditional spoon that we all had and used. That represents the First Nations. And the netting needles represent the net menders. The basket represents the female weavers of our people. And I just showed some of the old cans and labels that were on there. And the boots belong to my mother-in-law. She was from England. And she those are her cannery boots. And then when you go on the other side, what I did was this side here with the apron and the uniform is my sister's. Worked in the cannery over 40 years. Those are cannery gloves. And then Can Fisco was one in Rupert. Paramount was the brand for Port Edward for the Nelson Brothers Fisheries, and that's where I grew up. And that's the Port Edward flag. Each cannery had a flag. And what I did on this side was I did a face that represents our people. And I wanted to face the ocean. The red are the salmon eggs. And so this really important part of our heritage is part of my heritage. And to me, it's real. And why I did them in red? Red is our spiritual color, you know, and it's for protection. Eh? And also the red, we say, is our land. The red is our culture. The red is our people. I mean, the circle. And the circle is our drum, you know.
Well, one you mentioned, yeah, it's, you know, contemporary installation is a bit of a departure from what most people would associate with you, carvings, drawings. Is this something that you've been wanting to do and pull this together for a long time, knowing that the history is so deep with this and with this place and your family?
Oh, yeah, you know, because people want to keep us in categories, you know. Mm. They want me to make those big, expensive carvings. But yeah. I'm an artist. And you can't tell an artist what to do. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd be a carpenter.
Yeah. Be a little boring.
And you know what's really good about getting old? You just don't give a shit anymore.
I'm waiting to get there.
I'm going to do what I want to do, right? That's what I'm doing. So that's what I'm doing. Because you know why? It's there. Yeah. It's there. And it's my time now, too.
One thing that was mentioned was that, you know, you grew up around here, Port Ed. Your family's so deeply connected to this. I mean, this whole area, you know, there was half a dozen canneries here up at Port Essington. Mm-hmm. You know, the history is so deep in this place. You know, you can kind of feel the energy just being here. One thing that was mentioned was that this is a bit of a homecoming for you. I think I met your sister.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Also here.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's a lot of friends and family that have come out. How does it feel to come back to this place, and what are you kind of feeling in terms of, you know, the energy and the history, knowing that you kind of brought it all together in this piece?
Well, I feel, you know, like I like coming here because it brings me back to my childhood, and it was a great old days, you know. It was creative, you know what I mean? It was a creative time. And at that time, our culture was very strong, and we shared and helped everything, and we worked hard. Mm-hmm. You know, we worked hard. And everybody that worked in the cannery, our people, they said, you know what, it was the best times of their lives, and that's how I feel, too. Okay. You know, because, you know, it's never going to happen again. And we had a lot of elders, and our elders came from the last century, so they had a lot of knowledge, you know what I mean? And the culture was strong, and I was lucky, really I was lucky that I listened, and I wish I listened more, though, but...
Yeah.
And I want to make a statement about the salmon, because we're losing the salmon, because the salmon is our culture, it's our foundation, you know. Salmon was what gave us time to carve and do our culture and live. You know, we could put up enough salmon in a month to last a year or more, you know what I mean? So the eagle depends on the salmon. It's the foundation of our culture. And it's spiritual to us, too, you know, because when you think about it, look, if we lose the salmon, eagles are gone, ravens are gone, killer whales are gone, animals are gone, and we're next. This is our buffalo. So that's why it's important, and that's why I want to make a statement about, you know, losing them. That's what I'm doing anyways.
All right, Dempsey, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Tune in to frequencynews.ca to hear Dan Messick's complete story.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
So here's one thing I had no idea that it existed. Plowing competitions. Yes, indeed, the 2024 Ottawa-Carleton Plowing Match is being held near Sarsfield, Ontario this year. It's the first time it has been held in the area since 2011. The competition is on August 23rd to 24th at the Chrétien Family Farms on Dunning Road. That's just outside of Sarsfield, east of Ottawa. Farmers will compete by plowing the straightest possible furrow. There are different heats and classes of tractors, as well as horse-drawn plows. The winners of this competition will move on to compete in higher-level plowing matches next year. Journalist Candice Vetter in Carlsbad Springs, Ontario, met up with Don Good.
Don Good is the president of the Ottawa-Carleton Plowmen's Association. Yeah, so this year you're having the local plowing, like the Ottawa-Carleton Plowing Match in Sarsfield, I understand.
That's correct. On Dunning Road, the signs are up, so it's not hard to find. And it is on Saturday, August 24th.
I understand that you've been involved in plowing matches for a long time, since you were a teenager. So how did you come to become involved in this?
Well, I was a 4-H kid, from the farm. We farmed down in both the Waterloo County originally and in Lincoln County. Mm-hmm. So I did all the 4-H, function. And then I got away from it because I also practiced law for the last 40-some-odd years for farmers. Then I got connected up here with the Ottawa-Carleton group. I knew some of their people, so I've been fairly active now for the last 4 or 5 years with the local group.
When people are competing in the Ottawa-Carleton match, is it the winners who then would move on to the international plowing match, or how does that work?
Yeah, and you have to remember, the international plowing match is actually the provincial one. It's called that because way, 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 way back many years ago, the first one was held, I believe, somewhere near New York State, and somehow it got kind of an international, but it really is the provincial. Because there's also a Canadian-level plowing match. And then there's an international level this year. I think it's in Lithuania somewhere.
Oh.
So you work your way through the system. You do your locals, and then you can go to Lindsay this year. The IPM is at Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go on to the Canadians. I think they're on Wolf Island this year. Now, this year's people would be next year's international. So the people who are going to the international ones this year would have won last year. So they're already, I think, on their way to Lithuania.
Oh, wow. That's quite a trip.
It's a big operation. The international one is all over the world. It's been in Africa and Russia. It's a major event.
That's really interesting. I hadn't realized it was so far afield, literally. Mm-hmm.
Well, it is.
Yeah. So how's the organizing going for this year's local match?
Well, it's all pretty well set up. We pretty much have the same format every year. The plowers come from the local area. We cover most of Eastern Ontario. Mm-hmm. There's one almost every weekend because each of the counties have their own plowing match. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a plower, you can plow pretty well every weekend in August and September. So they come and they register, and then we usually the Wednesday before, if the weather's good, we lay out all the land. Mm-hmm. So they're all laid out with stakes and stuff, and then they are assigned them as they come in, and they plow their fields. We have a judge, and judges it, and the winners are picked. And then there's, like, we have horses. I don't know if you noticed on one of the flyers I sent you, there's a team of horses. So we usually have two or three teams of horses. We have both men and women, young people, so it's quite a variety of people who come. A lot of them bring their families and stuff, so it's quite a day for them.
Mm-hmm. And is there, if people want to come and watch, is there any, like are there going to be, I think you mentioned a canteen will be there and stuff like that. Is there anything else going on?
And there's usually a people mover. It's a wagon with chairs and stuff on it, so if you don't want to walk, the field, there's a lot of, we cover quite an area. So, if you don't want to walk all that, because, again, this time of the year it gets pretty hot, we have a people mover that takes people around to see the different plowing. And we have to finish by 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock is the deadline. So we're done by then. Well, after 3 o'clock, of course, then we have the presentation of the various prizes and winners, and then it's over.
How does it work with the plowing? Like, I know that it's a different farm that you're at every year. And yep. Do you have to do like a crop rotation for a couple of years beforehand so that you have a field that's ready to, that needs to be plowed at the right time?
Yeah, we usually pick our field every year. But we do try to find the right crop. Like this one has got a rye on it, and mm-hmm. that'll all be harvested just before the plowing match. And then, so the field will then be ready to go. You'll have that stubble to work with. So we don't do it years in advance, but we do pick the right crop so that the fields will be ready when the plowing match is on.
Okay.
Sometimes these crops don't always do what they're supposed to do, so we have backup plans usually in case something goes wrong, as you imagine. But we do pretty good.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine.
Some of the people have been on this have been doing it for many, many years, so this is.
Yeah, I think, you mentioned that they've been going on for over 100 years.
I'm not sure it went back that far, but plowing has certainly been going on a lot longer than that. And, plow was opened up this country back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised how young children just love tractors and horses. So if you want to bring your kids out to, you have to make sure you look after them carefully because, tractors are moving around, the horses are moving around.
Tractors and horses, yes.
Yeah, but young children just love to watch the tractors and the horses. And they usually have some vintage tractor displays and things like that as well. So it's a good show. Come on out.
Well, thanks again, Don. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Okay.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
So that's it for us. Be sure to take a peek at all our stories on frequencynews.ca. Our team is posted all across the country, and I mean it, the Maritimes, Quebec, Ontario, Alberta, and BC. We have lots of stuff waiting for you there. Thanks to our journalists this week, Lauren McKenzie, Dan Messick, and Candice Vetter, national editors Maureen McEwen and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. Boris Chassaigne here with you, your host and producer. Thanks for having us this week, and until the next, ciao.